Today, the Postal Service plays an integral part in the lives of Americans of every age and station.
Neither snow, nor rain, nor heat, nor gloom of night stays these couriers from the swift completion of their appointed rounds. That's the very unofficial motto of the United States Postal Service, which is 245 years old. Since its inception, the Postal Service has been through a lot. The vast expansion of the U.S., a civil war, two world wars, Y2K, the Great Recession. It has adapted to changing times and continued to offer its most basic, vital service. But will it survive this pandemic? The Postal Service has been facing deep financial hardship over the last few decades, long before COVID-19 pushed us into today's economic crisis. USPS is still delivering the mail during this pandemic, but there's trouble for the agency on the horizon. President Trump recently signed the CARES Act to bail out industries and individuals and to prevent the economy from collapsing any further. But that $2 trillion aid package?
I've never signed anything with a T on it.
Included no bailout for the Postal Service, only a proposed $10 billion loan that the service will have to pay back, and which will only keep the agency afloat for a short time. According to the Washington Post, President Trump explicitly refused to allocate any funds to the Postal Service and its vulnerable employees in the CARES Act. Meanwhile, Postal Service workers continue to put themselves in harm's way to bring us the mail. I'm Matt Katz, filling in for Tanzina Vega, and today on The Takeaway, we're breaking down the history, the present, and the future of the Postal Service. I spoke with Jake Biddle, a freelance journalist in Brooklyn who has covered the Postal Service for The Nation magazine, and Phil Rubio, a history professor at North Carolina A&T State University. I began by asking Phil about how the Postal Service got to the brink of collapse in recent years.
You had a politically manufactured crisis, starting with the 2006 Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act that told the post office starting in 2007 that it had to set aside $5.5 billion per year for 10 years to pre-fund retiree health benefits. And the purpose of that was to balance the Bush administration budget. What it did was start putting the U.S. Postal Service deeper in debt every year. The Postal Service has not used any government funds since 1982. It was changed over from the U.S. Post Office Department starting in 1971 after the nationwide postal wildcat strike of 1970. So it's been self-supporting. But there was a crisis, postal financial crisis in 2009 as a result of the Great Recession. That was the first manufactured crisis. And now, 11 years later, we're seeing another novel, mutated version of that same crisis with President Trump refusing to offer any bailout funds for the Postal Service.
The Postal Service has a long history. It goes back 240 years.
245 years, actually.
245. Give us a little history lesson on how the Postal Service originated.
In 1775, the post office is born in wartime. It's one of the most revolutionary things about the American Revolution. And it was founded with the primary function being as a political and information network, in contrast to the European model, which was to raise revenue for the treasury. So you have the Post Office Department established formally in as a permanent feature in 1794, along with provisions for letter carriers. In 1864, you have the railway mail service. You have rural free delivery in 1902, parcel post in 1913. So a lot of milestones of the post office being a part of American development.
There's a question of race dynamics in the Postal Service's history too, right, Phil?
The issue of race at the post office goes back to the early 1800s when there were a lot of politicians who were fearful of the Haitian rebellion and African Americans learning more about it and also having access to something as crucial as the mail, a crucial infrastructure. And so they banned African Americans from delivering the mail till 1865 with the conclusion of the Civil War. 1865, you start to see African Americans migrating to the post office as a kind of job niche. That job was considered less discriminatory than the private sector. They could take advantage of Republican Party patronage and be appointed. to positions until 1883, when you see the Civil Service Act. They can start taking tests now. And even though there's discrimination, they are fighting their way into the post office. They are fighting their way into postal unions.
Jake, I was wondering if you could bring us up to the current date and tell us how COVID-19, this pandemic, has affected the Postal Service.
So I'd say that there are sort of two main effects. The first one in the early weeks of the pandemic was that a lot of postal workers were forced to do their job without adequate protective equipment or disinfecting protocols. So, I mean, like a lot of people in the country, it took the Postal Service a while to stock up on masks and hand sanitizer. And because there are so many postal stations in so many different parts of the country, it took a while for the Postal Service to develop protocols that would work for mail sorters and letter carriers as well. So that has basically been resolved in a lot of the stations with the sources that I've spoken to. They are able to do their jobs with masks and gloves now. But the second main effect, and probably the more disastrous one, is that more than 750 postal workers have tested positive for the virus as of the most recent numbers, and more than one have died. And as a result, thousands of the workers have been put under quarantine. That severely strains the labor force, especially at smaller stations. So you're seeing disruptions to the normal mail operations. And in some parts of the country, they're having difficulty getting the mail out because a lot of these people are already working overtime, 10, 12-hour shifts as a result of the cuts to the Postal Service's labor force in recent years. So it's sort of made a bad problem worse in that way.
Who's most affected by this? Are there particular workers that are more affected by the pandemic than others?
I would say that the workers who are probably most affected would be those who sort the mail in the stations and clerks, because they work in close quarters a lot of the times. And then probably urban letter carriers in places like New York and Seattle, where the pandemic has progressed quite far, who they come into person-to-person contact with their clients and with fellow employees quite often. So I'd have to say that a letter carrier in a place like the Bronx or Manhattan is probably most at risk, just because there's the most person-to-person interaction.
And therefore, probably African-American letter carriers and postal workers would be more affected.
Certainly.
We know the Trump administration is refusing to provide a bailout for the United States Postal Service. Why? And what are the implications of that?
The first thing that needs to be clear is that the reason why you don't hear about the Department of Education or the Department of Energy needing a bailout is because, like Phil said, the Postal Service is entirely funded by, or almost entirely funded by, actual revenue from the sale of mail. It doesn't receive taxpayer money. So the motivations for denying the Postal Service a bailout are still a little bit mysterious to me, but it has been a Republican talking point for years that the Postal Service is unsustainable, that it needs to be privatized, that it can't go on. But as Phil sort of outlined, I think that the crisis that it was facing before is manufactured. It's not a real issue with the Postal Service's operational model.
Jake, what about voting by mail? There's been speculation that the Trump administration is refusing to bail out the Postal Service because of the voting by mail issue. And we just saw this play out in Wisconsin. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure, yeah. So in addition to delivering medicine and conducting welfare checks, the Postal Service delivers mail-in ballots. And given the potential for a second wave of the outbreak, vote by mail is probably an essential feature of the next relief bill. And I could see, instead of trying to oppose the instituting of vote by mail by Congress, you know, the Trump administration could allow the Postal Service to fail and then sort of escape vote by mail that way.
Phil, even if it was funded, is the Postal Service able to carry out voting by mail? Does it have the capacity and resources to do it?
It certainly does. Already 1/4 of Americans vote by mail, mostly through absentee balloting. The Postal Service has had those kinds of resources. It was even an Obama executive order in case there was a biological terror attack that the post office, but that letter carriers would be going door to door with vaccines, and that's still on the books.
Jake, is the Postal Service management doing anything to help postal workers, given what they're going through and how many have been affected by coronavirus?
the management's response has been evolving rather quickly. But one of the first things that they did was institute a more liberal paid leave policy to allow employees whose children are at home or out of school to take leave in a more flexible way. And they've made scheduling a little bit more flexible. But I think that they are faced with a real labor crisis here, where there just soon won't be enough people in each postal station to get the mail out. And so one thing that they've considered is instituting a temporary hiring policy that would allow them to bring in potentially some of the Americans who have lost their jobs in the midst of the pandemic to supplement staffing at a lot of these stations. But, you know, I should stress that the number one priority should be making sure that the workers are actually safe.
Phil, I'm curious about the worst case scenario here. What would it mean if the Postal Service, given the funding shortages, were to be shut down?
We'll lose letter mail, parcels, we'll lose e-commerce. Every day, tens of millions of prescriptions come to American homes.
So, Jake, then, what needs to happen to secure the Postal Service's future?
Sure. So in the short term, it seems like Congress could easily just give them some money. They did in the first round of the CARES Act, and in the near future, in the second relief package, it would be a simple matter to just provide a temporary infusion of cash until mail volumes return to normal. In the long term, there are a lot of things that could be done to rescue the Postal Service from what Phil described as this kind of panic disorder. I mean, they could be relieved of the pre-funding obligation that he mentioned, or some politicians have also suggested a postal banking system, which I believe existed in a previous era, where the Postal Service could provide a kind of public option for banking in low-income or rural areas and could make some revenue thereby. I mean, there are a lot of ways that going forward, the Postal Service could be not just self-sufficient, but could invest in its future. It is a matter of political will. All this stuff has to be run through Congress, as I understand it.
Jake's right. And, you know, it's interesting that the U.S. Postal Service Fairness Act, H.R. 2382, passed with an overwhelming majority in Congress, including half of Republicans. So what's holding it up is the Senate and President Trump. So that could easily get the Postal Service out from under this debt obligation that it was imposed on it. And the $25 billion that the Postal Service is asking in cash as a bailout seems entirely reasonable, considering the $500 billion of essentially unsupervised loans that are being earmarked for the airlines, restaurants, and hotels.
Phil Rubio is a history professor at North Carolina A&T State University, and Jake Biddle is a freelance journalist in Brooklyn who has covered the Postal Service for The Nation magazine. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.